Hello and welcome to the Firestarter Podcast, powered by our friendly neighbors at Nextdoor, the neighborhood app. It's easy to plug into your neighborhood right now by simply downloading the Nextdoor app or by visiting nextdoor.ca/flames. I'm Brian Dietrich, he's Brendan Parker, and we've got a loaded episode today. A busy week for the Calgary Flames in the rearview mirror, and we'll get to that in a moment here. But first, let's check in with our pal Parks. What's up, buddy?
What's going on? It's getting to the home stretch here. It's obviously a little bit longer than we had anticipated originally, at least in terms of the regular season schedule. And yeah, this is it. This is the home stretch. Only three more games left.
This is it, and they'll let you out of the freezer at the Saddle Dome at some point. You look a little, you a little chilly today, or what's going on?
There's a chill in the air. It's been here all year. My heater broke. It's lasted six games.
Budget cuts. Sorry about that.
I'm blaming Alana for that. I don't know why.
Timing is a little suspect.
Yeah, it is. I think she pulled something, some cables on the way out. It's cold. I'll say this. It's been consistent, though, so I'll give them credit for that. But I think they're trying to smoke us out.
One of those times where the home studio proving to be a bit of a benefit for me right now. So
yeah, you probably got shorts on under that desk.
I actually do.
I knew it. I knew it. I have long johns on, for crying out loud.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, it sucks for you, man. Anyway, all right, let's get to some hockey. This is a hockey podcast, after all.
Style podcast.
Unfortunately, the Calgary Flames will not be headed to the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. Over the past few days, the leaders have held court over Zoom. You've had some one-on-one conversations in your one-up, one-down setup. What's caught your attention?
Yeah, I mean, I think nothing surprising, that's for sure. I think the overwhelming or prevailing theme would be disappointment, understandably so. But at the same time, I think everybody was somewhat realistic to possibility, or at least the odds, here in the last week or so. I mean, obviously you cling to that opportunity, that hope, for as long as mathematically possible, and that finally ran out on Monday. But I think, you know, for a little bit of time here, you know, the inability, and actually, to be honest, I thought Milan Lucic probably summed it up best. It's something that's been brought up a few different times this year, but when you can't win, you know, more than three consecutive games, especially kind of getting to this point of the season where, you know, we started to know, I mean, at what point do we remember, you know, Daryl Sutter, was it 14 games? We got to win out our final 14. It was somewhere along those lines. So you knew it started to become about that, and they just couldn't string enough wins together here at any point during the season, but in particular kind of down the stretch when it was getting to be kind of a win out type scenario. So, which is very difficult to do, understandably so, but it's kind of been the theme for this team this year. That snowball's ran downhill a little bit more than it's gone uphill. So, you know, it's tough, but that's the situation it is. And, you know, I know there'll be a lot of time to dissect it all, and it's hard to do it when you still have a few games left, but that's kind of where you're left here.
It's almost crazy to think too, that, you know, you started looking down the last stretch of the season and the Flames were hoping that the Montreal Canadiens would stumble a little bit. Mm-hmm. They did. Yep. They actually didn't win any of those final, I think it was five games, but you get two to overtime. And obviously that was, they only needed one to clinch the spot. So it was, as you said, tough uphill climb when you're hoping for perfection on both ends of the spectrum. That's for sure.
Well, and the other thing with the, you know, the Montreal situation is you had that series, the head-to-head one, obviously. Flames did a huge part there. You get within, you know, 4 points, and then you have that chance to get within two.
Yeah.
And it was more so, it wasn't even so much that last loss in that three-game series, but it was more so the two come-from-behind wins that Montreal had just after that series that sort of kind of put a wrap on things, because Calgary had opportunities to climb closer again. But, you know, again, when you're leaving it up to another team, makes that situation tough.
Like you said, those wins they had, that was really the first time that the Canadians actually took control of their own situation, because they had been, I mean, they had been up against it for a while, and in injuries, the schedule, it all plays a part. But that was really the first time where you thought, okay, they're starting to round into something here. And it started to make the picture look a little bit, a little bit darker if you remember the Flames, that's for sure. I said that was the big news of the week, but this is probably even bigger. The Flames the other day announced that Sean Monahan has been shut down for the year and will undergo hip surgery next week. Head coach Daryl Sutter said that, you know, this is something he's been fighting through for a good 20 games or so. Parks, when a guy is playing through pain like that, and not just playing, but really performing at a high level and constantly working on his game, What does that say about a guy's character?
Well, it says a lot, I think. And it's not something new for him. You know, I think he's been a guy that's shown he will play through injuries and sometimes significant ones. I think you kind of go back, you know, what was it, 2 years ago, his season finished and they announced that he was going to have like three separate off-season surgeries.
Right.
You know, I think wrist, and I honestly don't remember all of the other ones, but I almost thought hip was one of them. But regardless, you know, the point I'm trying to make is this is a guy that has and will always put the team first and do everything in his power to get in the lineup and contribute at all costs. And I think it kind of became a little bit clear that he might be dealing with something at different points in the season. And if you remember back, he was actually shut down for two games earlier in the year. So right, I know Daryl pointed out, you know, 20 games, or at least that's kind of the number that's kind of made the rounds here because of what Daryl said. But, you know, you almost wonder going back to, you know, I think it was mid-February, a pair of games against the Oilers, you know, if that was something that was part of it or contributing to it, or maybe that's when it first started. So, you know, there's a real possibility that he'd been battling something for the better part of the entire season, or at least two thirds of the season. And, you know, I think Sean Monahan takes some heat in this market. It seems to always come up every year. And I was talking to Peter Labardius about this, but I've always been kind of like a staunch defender of Sean Monahan because of the amount of strides he's made in all areas of his game, the defensive side, yeah, the fight,
sure,
the, you know, just the leadership, face-offs, the
face-offs.
That we
saw this year too. Yeah,
absolutely. All of that. And I don't think that you can overlook that just because the point totals aren't what you'd expect them to be, or maybe what as a fan you'd want them to be. And I also saw some criticism about, you know, why is he playing still? And I'm like, how can you criticize a guy? You know, Matt Stajan sat here, he played with him. He said, you can't take him out of the lineup. Like, he won't come out. He wants to be part of this group. And yeah, sure, maybe the goals aren't as high as you'd want him to be, but this guy did everything in his power to get this team further ahead. And you can't criticize that to me.
Well, and think of the impact that has in the dressing room too. We've known Monahan for a few years. He's a quiet guy. He's not going to come out in the media and say,
I'm fighting.
You know, my point totals are down because I'm dealing with this. Nobody had any idea.
Yeah.
Like, and you'd have to imagine that the guys that are sitting next to him in the dressing room are saying, look at this guy over here and what he's playing through and what he's willing to put his body through. Well, when we go out on the ice, we better be doing that for him because he's doing it for us.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, you heard Milan Lucic and Mark Giordano both talk about it. So guys know. Guys are fully aware of what's going on. And he won't be the only one. We'll hear more. You know, that's the way that this game works. You know, will all of it require surgery in the offseason? No, but guys are playing through things. And, you know, I can't even imagine what, you know, throughout the course of that season, what that guy went through every single day to practice and to participate in games. And because, you know, it wouldn't have been,
he didn't even miss a practice.
That's the crazy thing. He's always there. And that's why people, you know, it becomes an easy target. But you have no idea. No one had. I mean, maybe you could guess. And I'm sure. And it had been out there a little bit in terms of, you know, people wondering. But nobody knew. Right. And he was never going to let it on until after. And I can't say enough about, you know, the kind of guy that he is and the leadership role that he's taken on. So, you know, you'll never hear me criticize, especially when it comes to that.
Well, you know, and I hate to basically steal the work of Peter Labardius, but I was listening to him on the radio the other day, and you know what he said about Sean Monahan is true. I mean, he's not you know, you wouldn't look to him to say he's probably the best interview on the team, I suppose, but man, that guy owns everything about his game. And he'll say it in a few words if he needs to, but he always is willing to take the heat, kind of shoulder the blame or the criticism or whatever's coming his way. Doesn't bother him. He's going out there playing for his teammates, and I think that's what's most important. And I think that's what fans need to remember as they go into the offseason, how much this guy has put into his team and into his city.
Yep.
That's vital.
And he's always tried to get better. That's all you can ever ask for. And he's, you know, and I say better, but in other areas, right? It's the goal scoring has always been what you think of when you think of Sean Monahan, his ability to finish. But that doesn't make a complete hockey player. And that's the one thing that he has dedicated himself to. And I think he's made huge strides in that area in the last 2 years, without a doubt.
Well, speaking of players being banged up, I mean, coming up, we're going to be joined by Flames defenseman Noah Hanifin from his home in Boston. You know, just a great conversation with him as he looks back on what was really a strong year personally, but obviously it ended prematurely with that shoulder injury. He just had surgery, so he's got a little bit of a long road ahead in terms of rehab and is hoping to be back to full speed when training camp opens in September, so stay tuned for that. But lastly, Parks, here before we get to that conversation, the Flames were in action on Thursday, kind of getting back to it after the playoff race came to an end. It begins a stretch of four straight against the Vancouver Canucks, who were also eliminated earlier this week. I mean, obviously the intensity and the physical play that you're used to seeing in meaningful games wasn't quite at that same level. But, you know, I thought all the things that the Flames have been talking about lately, puck possession, shot volume, details, I thought it was all there. I thought they played quite well. And personally, I thought it was thoroughly entertaining.
Yeah, agreed. I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't think anybody came in here thinking the hits were going to be 25-23, and they weren't. I think like 11-7 in favor of Vancouver, and that might have been a bit of a stretch. But that doesn't matter. I don't think that takes away from, you know, the fact that I thought you're right. I think the Flames played a pretty clean game. I thought you know coming out of the zone, the way they got through the neutral zone, they were there together, and still kind of did what they do best, and that's kind of get it into the offensive zone and control the puck down low and cycle and just kind of go to work. And that was still there. The work, the effort was still there, and that's what you want to see. And you know, from an entertainment standpoint, you got your offensive players once again contributing, and you look at a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, who is kind of fighting it in terms of the goal scoring. Like, he'd been all around it for a number of games. They just weren't going in. There's even one last night, that goes through the blue paint that he just misses, and he kind of felt like it was going to be another one of those nights. Then he gets kind of the makeup bounce off the stick of JT Miller.
That's right.
All is right in the world again. But two more points, five in his last two. I think it was 7 points between that trio or something along those lines. So from an entertainment standpoint, it was all there. The work standpoint, all there. Jacob Markstrom was great again, particularly in the second period. The only kind of, I'd say, lapse in that entire game from the Flames, and full marks for sure.
That top line, that isn't new, by the way. They've been playing at a high level for some time now, and I think they've really stumbled on something pretty good here with the Tkachuk, Gaudreau, Lindholm unit that perhaps you might be looking at come the fall too. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that one for now. But you mentioned Jacob Markstrom. How about that? Picks up his 20th win of the season, and if you look at his last five games, he's running at a .926 save percentage and clearly wants to head into the offseason on a high.
Yeah, I agreed. And we had him on the postgame show last night, and you can tell he feels good about it. We were joking because, I think Stage asked him, like, do you know what the schedule is? What are you looking at here the last few games? He's like, nope, don't know. I haven't been told, but I'll play. I'm ready. And we're like, yeah, big shocker. He's played 14 in a row. This guy is ready. I made the joke. He'd be ready to go right now if we wanted. And by right now, I meant after the game, like postgame. He'd go again. That's just who he is. That's how he prepares. I don't think you're ever worried about that. So he's been sensational, really good. And just to kind of point out that stretch in the second period, I mean, it was heavy Vancouver there. I mean, I think there was a shift. Yeah. They got pinned in, and he was equal to every shot. And, you know, if you give one up there, maybe changes the tone of it. Instead, you kind of take control after that, and you kind of look back at that second period, and Markstrom played a huge role in it.
I really enjoyed your conversation with him last night. Actually, I always enjoy a Jacob Markstrom interview because he always goes out of his way to talk about the privilege of playing in the National Hockey League. And I think that's really important to maintain no matter how old you are. Guy just loves the game.
And I don't want to be sitting here not playing. Like, bottom line is, if the alternative is not playing, you know, the guy wants to get in there. He's not going to want to sit on the bench or sit in the stands and watch just because. I mean, he's your number one goalie. And if he wants to play, I guarantee he will play some more before this is all over. Maybe not all three, as he has the last, you know, month of the season, but he will play.
We'll see. We'll see if he twists some arms on that side of things.
Can you imagine back-to-back to finish off the season? I mean, of anyone, I wouldn't put it past him, but...
Yeah, of anybody, I'd say there's always a chance. Let's put it that way. But yeah, Daryl Sutter not tipping his hand at all on that front, and not tipping his hand on something else that we'll get to after our conversation with Noah Hanifin, which we'll get to right now.
When you need to borrow a ladder, or your pet runs away, or you want to get the top recommendations for local takeout food, the best people to turn to are your neighbors. Download Nextdoor, the free app with verified users in every Calgary community, keeping neighbors connected for great advice, recommendations, help, and more. Get the most out of your neighborhood with Nextdoor, connecting neighbors in communities all over Calgary. Download the app today or visit nextdoor.ca.
Pleased to welcome in Flames defenseman Noah Hanifin from his home in Boston. Noah, obviously the circumstances being what they are, but how are things with you?
Yeah, things are well. Obviously, you know, not the the greatest ending for the team and obviously myself getting injured, but I mean, from where I am right now, I feel good. I had surgery a little over a week ago and, you know, I feel that I'm on the right track. So just trying to focus on, you know, healing and recovering as best I can just to make sure I'm 100% come start of the season.
How about just go through, you know, the process here after the injury and kind of deciding on how you had to approach things, you know, medically, the surgery, obviously going back home and kind of feeling comfortable with, you know, the procedure and everything.
Yeah, well, you know, first thing was first is just making sure, you know, myself and the organization, we were all on the same page. And obviously we have a great medical staff, great trainers, great doctors, and just getting their advice and their opinions on what they think would be the best move for me judging by the situation. And obviously we knew probably right away that surgery was going to be needed, just from what happened. And, you know, obviously I spent my summers here in Boston this summer, and obviously there's a lot of good, you know, medical places around here as well, a lot of good surgeons in my hometown. So, you know, the team, did some homework and looked into it and, you know, thought it'd be a good place for me just to come back home, be around my family and have some support here while I got the surgery and started my, my road to recovery.
What does the timeline look like? Do you anticipate being ready to go full power for training camp?
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, it's kind of tough. You know, it's, you know, everyone heals a little bit differently, and I think you got to be cautious and smart about just contact and stuff like that. But I mean, my goal is obviously to be ready for camp and to be ready for the start of the season. I mean, whether that is possible or not, I mean, I'm going to find out probably later in the summer. It's still so early. I don't really know what's going to happen yet, but the surgery went really well, and like I said, I'm just going to really focus on rehabbing as hard as I can, and so I am ready when the season starts up.
You said you kind of knew it right away. I mean, you had that kind of, you left the game earlier in the Montreal one, and then, you know, we kind of all just returned at the end of it, and then we didn't really think about it too much more afterwards. But, you know, was it something that you were cautious with as you were playing that? I mean, or when did you know that, you know, you might have some issues there?
Yeah, the first game in Montreal, I definitely banged it up a little bit and was just doing normal stuff, just treating it, making sure I was, you know, able to play. And I was, you know, I felt pretty good after that. I mean, our training staff did a great job. They're all over it. And, you know, it was just a very awkward play the way I went to the boards and my arm kind of got pushed back a little bit. And it was just an awkward situation, a play that, you know, you don't really put yourself in that much. It was pretty rare to find myself in that awkward position, which is pretty unfortunate, but it's part of the game of hockey. It happens and injuries are a part of it. And, you know, you just got to deal with it. Obviously I'd love to have been able to finish the season and play with the guys, but it's just, it was a tough balance, but it's just something you have to accept and try to, you know, be positive and move forward.
That's definitely the right attitude. Noah, just switching gears here, and obviously you alluded to the season that was now. Obviously not the one the team was hoping for, and to miss the playoffs for the first time in a couple of years now, I'm sure is a disappointing outcome for everyone. But you guys made some really good strides after the coaching change. Can you sort of pinpoint why you guys couldn't translate that improvement in play to goals and ultimately wins down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously when Daryl came in, he had a little bit of, you know, he has more experience, you know, than some guys. I mean, we have a couple guys on our team that have won, but I mean, he's won two cups, and he definitely knows what it takes to be a Stanley Cup caliber team and to win. And I think there was just some certain areas of the game that we got to clean up and make sure we're holding each other accountable and playing to a certain level. And I thought as the season went on, I thought as a team, we did make strides in that area, which I think for next year is going to really help us. But like you said, I mean, it was just not the season any of us wanted. Obviously, everyone would love to be playing in the playoffs, and that's what we expected out of ourselves. But, you know, you don't want to sound cliche, but it's just something you have to really learn from and realize how valuable those points are in games early in the season when you get caught behind and you start falling behind a bit, that those really matter. And it's something, you know, we have to learn from and be ready for next year, because we got to come out of the gates, you know, hot.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm curious because, you know, now you're out of it, out of the, you know, kind of the bubble, so to speak. And I know it's not technically that, but, you know, we were bringing this question up earlier and it's probably hard for everybody to really put your head on it because you're still in the middle of it. But for you, like having now kind of been home a little bit separate, you know, can you really put your finger on how difficult this year in particular it was, you know, to climb out of things when it wasn't going as well? Like it seemed more difficult this year than anyway, when it starts going downhill a little bit, just the separation and the challenges this year.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and we knew that. I think going into the season, like all the teams realized is how important it would be to get off to a good start, because if you fall behind in this division and in this type of season, it's really hard. Just, you know, one, you play the same teams over and over again. So teams start to a lot about you and your team. And, you know, you kind of develop those rivalries. So every game's tough. And, you know, obviously the North Division was a good division. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of talent in this division. And I don't know, it's just different. I think in other seasons, you know, you're traveling, you go on, you know, a road trip and you play some teams in the East or something. And all of a sudden, you know, you get hot, you get five wins or something, you get a 5-game win streak, and then you start to turn things around. Whereas this year it was a little bit different. Oops, sorry. Sorry, the dogs.
We welcome dogs on this program. Yeah. It's good.
The FedEx guy.
It was different for sure. You know, we're playing the same teams over and over again. And I think anytime that happens, you know, it can get challenging to climb your way out of, you know, a drill or, you know, being behind. So
when you're playing the same team over and over again, kind of what you're talking about there, like you open the season, you had a big series against Winnipeg, another against Vancouver, and then you kind of go a period without playing them again for a few months. Were those teams kind of a different version of the team that you faced earlier? Like, did they pick up on things you were doing? Did you guys read things off them? How did that all play out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's weird. Like, you know, at the beginning of the year, I think we started off, we played Vancouver 4 times in a row or something like that early in the year. And yeah, you start to learn a lot about each other. And especially like when it comes to special teams, power plays, penalty kills, you start to learn a lot about what teams' habits are. And you know, it can get a little challenging at times, but I mean, I think, you know, you can't make excuses. Every team's going through the same thing in the whole league, and you just got to find ways to kind of fight through that and keep building. So I thought, you know, as the season went on, you know, I thought we became a much more competitive team. I thought we started working a lot harder and making ourselves more competitive against the teams, but obviously it wasn't good enough. So
for you personally, I know that you kind of, you know, you talked at this very start of the year, I think just as we were going through the training camp, just about, you know, some of the personal goals you set, or at least taking kind of, you know, step forward in, you know, different levels or different parts of your game. What did you feel, now that you had some time to kind of think about it, you know, where those areas really, improved for you? And I mean, obviously from the outside looking in, you had a, you know, heck of a season. But what are you most proud about in terms of, what you were able to accomplish this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think I got, you know, a lot more confident in a lot of areas of my game. I thought, you know, first off, you know, defensively, I thought I became a lot more effective and trusted, you know, being on the ice against top guys and playing top players and playing in defensive situations, which is the most important thing for any defenseman. Obviously playing, you know, for the majority of the season with a guy like Chris, you know, he was great for me. I mean, he really helped me a lot. And I thought we had great chemistry together and kind of fed off each other real well. So I think that was another reason why, you know, I had, you know, somewhat of a solid year. And, you know, even offensively, you know, I thought I was moving my feet. At the beginning of the year, I talked about just playing with more instinct and not thinking too much. I think that was something I kind of had an issue with at times. I overthought. And this year I was kind of just like, let the game come to me, play off my instincts and use my skating. You know, my skating's, you know, one of my stronger assets. And then when I do move my feet, I can have success. And when I don't, you know, I don't have the success. So I thought this year I did a good job of that. And it's something I got to keep building off. You know, I'm not, you know, satisfied or anything with obviously, you know, my season. And, you know, I want to keep getting better. And I feel there's a lot more room for me to grow. You know, I think I hit a good point this year where I know that I'm capable of a lot of things and being a valuable defenseman. And now I just got to keep building on the little things and making sure I'm improving for even next year.
Well, you when you say like, yeah, and the instincts in the National Hockey League, when it's so fast, that ounce of second guessing, whatever it might be, right? That's where the difference you find the most.
Yeah. And even just, you know, with the puck on your stick, you know, sometimes, you know, you know, I feel early in my career, sometimes I would play to, you know, I don't want to make a mistake or something. Right. Whereas now, can't even think about that. You know, you got to go out and just play. And if mistakes are part of the game and they happen, and it's okay, you recover from it and move forward. But I think, you know, this year I was just kind of got that out of my mindset a bit, and was just like, just go play your game, try to make plays, skate, jump on the play, and be aggressive, you know, be more assertive. And, you know, I think, when I do those things, the game, I find the game to be a little bit easier.
I hope I'm not overstating things, but you both kind of touched on that Zoom session you had early in training camp. And like you said, you talked about how you wanted to be more aggressive this year and things like that. And you also said that people thought they had you figured out, being only 23 years old at the time. And to me, that kind of felt like a moment for you to kind of go out there and say, no, that's not who I am. I'm going to show you what I am this year. And you obviously went out there and backed it up. Did it feel as significant to you to say those things publicly and then kind of take that challenge on yourself in a public eye like that?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you want to, I'm confident in myself, and I feel, the past couple seasons, I feel I was still really learning and building. And just because, I've played a lot of games and I've played a lot of years, sometimes it's easy just to kind of be, not written off honestly, but, this is what he is as a player. We kind of know what he is. And whereas my whole mindset was, I feel that I can bring more to the team and do more things to help the team win games. And I feel just each year I've progressed in different areas and gotten better and better. And now, just turned 24 this year, I'll be 25 next year, coming into a little bit more of my prime. I feel now is the time where I can really kind of step on the gas, and I'm confident. I know what I'm capable of. And, obviously playing with a guy like Chris Tanev, he's a great defenseman. He's a great leader. And, all the pieces are there. It's just up to me kind of just to put it together. And I feel I definitely made strides this year in that area. But like I said, I'm not fully there yet. There's a lot more of the game I can improve at. I keep getting better and better, and that's my goal. So coming to next year, it's another big year and a big opportunity for me.
Does it even kind of blow your mind that you're 24 years old and, assuming things go well, you could pass the 500 game mark next year?
Yeah, it's crazy. There's a lot that goes into that though. I've been, obviously I got this injury this year, but I've been pretty fortunate, throughout my career, and I've, I've been pretty lucky. So it's crazy to think about. I mean, it goes by quickly, and I think, it feels like just yesterday when I was first coming into the league, when I was in Carolina and stuff, and now I'm going to be going to my seventh season next year, which is a little crazy to think about, but yeah. It's been a good ride. It's been a lot of fun. And like I said, it makes the game more fun when you're constantly trying to improve and keep getting better in your game. That's what makes the game enjoyable. It makes me want to come back to the rink every day.
Luch was telling us about, all the spiels he used to get when he was breaking in about how fast it goes. Like, have you started to, I know he's telling guys not, you haven't got to that point though yet. Are you starting to give that speech to anybody yet? Do you remember getting that?
Luch has got a little bit on me.
Yeah.
I do know what he's talking about though. I mean, it is crazy. And, I was probably like 10 years old when Luch was like in Boston as a rookie and started playing when he was young. And it's, it's crazy. I think now, I'm his teammate and playing together, and he's only 32 years old, like he still has some time to play. And it's just, it's crazy. It does go by, really fast though. And it's just, you got to enjoy it, and you got to make the most of it for sure. Because you blink and all of a sudden, for me, I blinked and it's 7 years have gone by in the NHL, and you just got to, really just make the most of it. And I mean, obviously, talking to Luch a lot, he won that cup, Tanev, Chris has been to a Stanley Cup, Norsham's been to a Stanley Cup. You talk to these guys and they just say, it goes by fast. So like, you don't have a lot of chances to get to a Stanley Cup and then win in your career. And, for me, when I heard like Luch say that, it hit me, because I'm like, man, like, you actually don't get a whole lot of opportunity to win. So obviously this year for us wasn't a successful year as a team, but I think next year, I'm motivated, because it's, you want to take advantage of these years now when you're young, and you want to try to win now. So it doesn't go by too fast.
Yeah. We obviously ran the gamut with Luch over the past few weeks going into his 1000th game and all that. But do you remember what you were doing? I think what you must've been 14 years old when Luch won the Stanley Cup in Boston. What was happening in the Hanifin household back then?
I think I was just with a bunch of like family and friends. We were all watching the game. I was a little too young to go to the bars, obviously. Sure. A couple of my high school buddies were at my friend's, so I was watching the game. And then I think my dad was out with a few of his buddies probably. it was that was a great time though to be a Bruins fan when I was young and in Boston when they won that Stanley Cup. And obviously it just shows you, you know, what it can do to a city, you know, when you win, it's a pretty special thing. So, you know, that's my goal. And it's good to have some guys in your room like Luch who have won, and like Daryl too, as a coach who have won, they know, you know, what it takes and how hard it is to get there. And that's going to, I think that's going to push us in the right direction.
Hey, I was going to ask you because, you know, I know this normally, like we'd see your family on the road and they get to a few games, especially when we go at East, it's always great to see them. But, you know, this, it must've been great. Even I know all things kind of aside the injury and not finishing the season, but just even to see family here, you kind of forget that, you know, you guys really haven't had a chance to, it's been what, you know, five months or so here.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen my family. It's tough too. You know, it's nice, you know, especially, you know, my dad, you know, he likes to go to a lot of games on the road or we're on the East Coast, or, you know, he likes to come to Calgary and visit. So it's tough for all the players and, you know, their families, you know, like to travel and go to games and see the players. And, you know, this year we didn't really have that opportunity, which makes you appreciate it a bit more when they do get to go. So
sure.
Hopefully next year we get back and my old man can come out to Calgary for a couple of games.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just kind of following up on that too. And I know this season was challenging and everybody faced their different set of circumstances, but how difficult was it to be, you know, here in Calgary or wherever you were on the road, but, you know, playing in a pandemic when the social interaction that you're used to just wasn't there?
Yeah, no, it was strange for sure. It was a little bit different of a year. I mean, even, you know, with the fans, you know, you know, I've said before, you know, you get into a game and once that adrenaline gets going, you kind of forget and you're just focused on the game. But, you know, when you have the Saddle Dome rocking the full crowd, you know, it's an awesome feeling, and it'll be good to hopefully return to that someday soon. And like you said, just, yeah, it was a different year. You know, you're not seeing your family, you're not seeing, you know, your buddies on the road, or, you know, you can't really go and see your teammates a whole lot outside of the rink. So it was different. And, hopefully it's an experience that, you know, the whole league and all the players don't really have to go through again, hopefully. But it was, at least we got to play, so I can't complain.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, and it is strange. Like I know you're a sports fan, you know, you started watching now in the States and you'll see a lot more of it now, but like the baseball stadiums that are starting to fill up and you're kind of like, wow, like that's when I think you start to almost realize how much you miss that sort of the feeling, right?
I think it was the other day I was watching golf with my dad and they were playing and it was like a tour event and they had like tons of people down there and they're all like screaming, going crazy, like around the holes. And yeah. I'm like, forget what it's like, how impactful, like having like fans like around, you know, is.
Yeah.
So it's definitely looking forward to getting back to.
Yeah. We adjust quickly to whatever it is. I just forget.
Yeah. Yeah.
Noah, last one for me here. And hopefully I'm not getting too personal, but we saw in the Sportsnet broadcast a few games ago that you touch base with a young girl who was recovering from, I believe, cancer treatment, and you two kind of exchanged video messages. It was really beautiful. Can you just kind of shed some light on how you two got connected?
I'm hoping for next year to get her and her dad to a game and just to meet them. But she, I remember last year she went through cancer and you know, had an operation done. And I sent her just a video, just wishing her good luck and you know, hoping that I can be here one day and bring her to her game. And she recovered and everything went successful and she's feeling great now. And, you know, obviously then I got her and she sent me a really nice video too, just wishing me the best and recovering and just a really nice girl. Seems like a great family. And, you know, that stuff means a lot and it's important in the game to make sure you're interacting with fans like that and puts things into perspective a bit. So it's, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting her and her family, hopefully someday soon.
Oh, that's great, awesome, man. Yeah, that's really cool. It must have been a nice surprise too. You're going through, trying to figure out everything, get traveled back and get a little video like that.
She's a lot tougher than a lot of us are playing hockey. So it was definitely inspiring and motivated me just to make sure I get back and, you know, don't get too down, don't complain about anything. You know, it's part of life and just you gotta crush it and just keep moving forward. So she's been great and can't wait to meet her.
Well, that's all I got for you, man. I just congrats on a great season. I know it didn't end the way you wanted to, but, you know, I know you'll have a big summer down there and hopefully enjoy a little bit of the recovery and rest and look forward to seeing you back up here in Calgary.
Yeah, guys, have a great summer and we'll see you again soon in the fall. Thank you.
Yeah.
You got it, man.
Thanks, bud.
The Calgary Flames Foundation Online 50-50, presented by RE/MAX, is now live. Support Southern Alberta charities by purchasing your 50-50 tickets starting at 9 a.m. each game day, and watch the jackpot grow at calgaryflames.com/50-50.
Parks, let's take a look at what's next for these Flames in the final three games of the season. Daryl Sutter, very honest about the fact that we'll see some younger players over the course of the next week or so. You were down at the Dome today watching practice, and at least based on what we saw today, it appears that the youth movement, I suppose, is on display and the coach is staying true to his word.
Yeah, it's slowly working in that direction. You know, I think a lot of people thought it would have happened Thursday night against the Canucks in that first one, but I think it's coming. And, you know, the way Daryl described it in terms of not just getting guys a game or getting them in there, the fact that he wants to get them in back-to-back scenarios. And that doesn't mean just playing on the back-to-backs. It means giving them an opportunity to play consecutive games, whether it's, you know, the next one and the one after that, or you know, two of them to finish off of the three. He's going to give these guys some minutes, and then it's just a matter of who and how many we see. And I think we saw it today in practice. Again, it was a full optional, so any of your veterans, sure, you know, weren't out there for the most part. Manj and Dubé, who I think you'd have to staple their skates to their stall in order to get them off the ice, but they were out there. And then it was a kind of a crew that's, you know, kind of evolved. They were skating as a Stockton group here the last couple of weeks since that heat season finished. And now they've kind of amalgamated. The other day they were skating in kind of almost a more of a taxi squad type group with Byron Fraze and Buddy Robinson. And now today kind of more full participants in a second tier Flames group. And so you're looking at Matthew Phillips and Adam Rozichka, Buddy Robinson there too, as far as the Stockton group, but Colton Poolman and, you know, I'm thinking in terms of younger guys, but there's some names out there like Rozichka and Matthew Phillips that I know a lot of people are just clamoring to see get an opportunity here.
Totally.
And I think they will. I think there's going to be a chance here. Obviously, Connor Mackey's at the top of that list. He was named specifically by Daryl Sutter. So, you know, we're going to see him. You know, I think you got a pretty good idea that you're going to see Rozichka here soon. He didn't, I talked to him today. He didn't, you know exactly when he'd get in, but is ready, and we'll see. But that's kind of the interesting part of the next three games for sure.
Well, we had Brad Pascal on the show last week, and obviously just had some glowing reviews for some of these players. And I think you sense a real excitement from everybody in the organization to get a look. They've seen him at the AHL level, as you mentioned, but you know, and obviously it's not quite the same because these games don't have the same impact as they would maybe earlier in the campaign. But personally, really excited to get a look at a guy like Matthew Phillips. I mean, he's done everything asked of him at the AHL level. The only knock on this player, of course, is his size. And you hate to even mention it because it almost gets brought up every time. But, you know, at 5'7", 140, all he's done over the course of his career is prove people wrong.
Yeah, and he could do it again at the next level. He's had the one recall. He did the one solo lap by himself in Arizona.
Yes.
Didn't get a chance to play that night, but we talked to him because it was a whirlwind that day. He came up, got in, got around the team, obviously didn't play, and then went back down. But, you know, this is a guy that I think, even just from that standpoint of what you just described, the fact that he has excelled at every level, including the American Hockey League, I think you just want to see. It's not about, to me, it's not even about evaluation necessarily. I mean, I'm sure you're watching, you're keeping a close eye on it. But to me, it's about you've done everything in your power to put yourself in the position to succeed and excel in this organization. And, you know, you deserve an opportunity to experience your first National Hockey League game. And whenever that may be, or if it comes this year, I think, you know, he's earned it. You know, whether or not it leads to consistent games in the NHL down the road, I don't know if that's necessarily the point. I think it's about, you know, rewarding a guy for the work, and this might be the perfect time to do it.
I'm glad you mentioned the solo lap, because I actually asked Matthew Phillips about that today, and hard to believe that was actually quote unquote last season at this point, but
yeah, 2 years ago,
man, that's about as close to the NHL as you're going to get without actually playing. So I just wanted to get his thoughts on what that was like. And, you know, with that carrot right in front of you, how does that build your confidence? Hey Matthew, it was about a little more than a year ago, I'd say, when you got that call up in Arizona and you met the team there and you got the solo lap treatment. That's about as close as you're going to get to, you know, making your debut without making your debut. But what was that night like, and what did that kind of do for your confidence to sort of give you the belief that you're right there on the cusp of things?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to think that was last season. It's been such a odd timeline, but you know, it was great. And that was something that just kind of motivated me that from that, when I got back to Stockton, to just keep pushing, to know that you're close and you need to keep doing things the right way. And Unfortunate that I got hurt after that, but I mean, that's just kind of been a motivating thing. And, you know, once you get a little taste of it, that's what drives you to keep working hard to get back to that level and hopefully stay there.
Well, it's funny. I was actually sitting there in the stall or in the hallway in Arizona watching that one. And I wasn't sure they were going to do it because he wasn't necessarily like, I don't think we knew for sure if he'd be playing that game. Right. Like, so we knew
we had no idea.
He was going to dress, take the warm up. But then Gio kind of like came up behind him and gave him a little kick. And he's like, let's go, Philly. And then off he went and then took the solo lap. So it's still a pretty cool moment for sure. And, you know, obviously can be surpassed by playing the game.
Little behind the scenes info on that moment. You were in the hallway.
I still have the video.
To get the walkout. And I was on the bench to try and get the full lap, you know, for social media. That was a great tag team effort. By the way, while we're telling stories on this whole situation, because I absolutely love this part. Earlier in the day, I think he got recalled. It was about 3 p.m. or so local. I was sitting on my patio crushing a burger while you were, I think, climbing Camelback Mountain. That's usually how it goes on road trips. Hey, Ryan, you want to go for a hike? No. Anyway, this cab pulls up and Matthew Phillips jumps out. He's wearing his, you know, Flames track gear and stuff. He had just arrived and he's running to his, you could just see this huge smile. And, you know, I happen to be on my patio at the time. So he sees me because I'm wearing all my Flames stuff and he waves and he's like, hey. And it was like, oh my God, this guy is jacked to be here. So that was like, in my entire time with the Flames, for whatever reason, that day, just seeing the genuine excitement on his face, that's tops.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of personality he is, right? Genuine, straight through and through. And man, it'd be awesome to see him get an opportunity and for the family as well.
How was the workout that day, by the way?
It was great. It was a great workout. Sean Kelso and I, PR Wizard, went and did it. First time I'd ever done it. Hot, real hot. But man, it was a good view. Good view of Scottsdale.
Yeah, well, it is the desert. It would be hot. That's for sure.
No surprise there.
You know what? Before we go here, Parks, I got to ask you too, because you and Matt Stajan have just done some incredible work on the Ram postgame show this year on Flames TV. And, you know, Matt's been such a great addition to the team and providing just great analysis, both not just the postgame show, but intermissions as well. The organization, you were able to be a part of something pretty cool last night and give him a little bit of a gift for him and his family.
Yeah, it was awesome. So Matt mentioned to me just briefly offhand one time was we were talking about Milan Lucic in his 1,000 games that the Flames do this really cool thing presenting a mini stick to the children, you know, when you get the big silver stick, the heavy silver stick to the player, the family or the kids get a little silver mini stick. And he mentioned that Katie was pregnant with their second son, Dylan, at the time. And so they only got one of the silver mini sticks. And so we were like, oh, okay, well, I just, you know, he said it just, and he said, I got to remember to get that done at some point here. And so we kind of parked it. And then Peter Stewart, who works in our an amazing Jumbotron crew, and he brought it up and got the wheels rolling. And we ended up getting one made up for Dylan, his son, their youngest, and surprised him with it last night on the postgame show. And he had no idea. We kind of planted a question into the Ask Stage segment that's become well known here on the postgame show. And we presented it to him last night and he was pumped. And now they got the full collection for the family. And as he said, he doesn't have to hide the other mini stick that Elliot only has. So now both kids have a stick. So it was cool. It was a lot of fun. He's been great to work with all year and just a little way of saying thank you, I suppose, from the whole crew.
Yeah, it's been a tough year, that's for sure. But we've had a lot of fun, too. And there's certainly some great people both in and outside this Flames organization. So it's always good to be able to celebrate their efforts and, you know, pull off what has just been, if you ask me, kind of a monumental undertaking and playing a full hockey season in the middle of a pandemic. So kudos to everybody involved there. That's for sure.
Yes.
Parks, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate your time, man.
Thank you. All the best.
You've been listening to the Firestarter Podcast, powered by Nextdoor, the neighborhood app.